Welcome to Encounter on Radio National. I'm Kerry Stewart. This week, we're delving into the business of branding churches, exploring Christian and Muslim advertising campaigns, and looking at the ethics of selling products using religious imagery. And along the way, we'll find out what these advertisements are telling us about the changing nature of Australian society and religious expression.
Ever since people started recording information, there's been a need to duplicate it.
This ad, made for Xerox photocopiers in the 1970s, uses traditional images of Christianity. The interior of a stone monastery lit by candlelight, monks in brown habits copying manuscripts by hand.
Very nice work, Brother Dominic.
Thank you.
Very nice. Now, I would like 500 more sets.
Brother Dominic, how are you?
Could you do a big job for me?
The Xerox 9200 duplicating system.
A bit later, we'll find out about the strategies of religious groups to sell themselves in the mainstream media. But we're starting with the history and contemporary trends of selling products using religious imagery.
Here are your sets, Father. The 500 sets you asked for.
It's a miracle.
I'm Bishop Rob Forsyth. I'm the Bishop of South Sydney in the Diocese of Sydney of the Anglican Church of Australia. Using society's cultural memory of religious occasions, certainly in a slightly humorous way, I think is a win for the Christian faith because it reminds you of these sort of people as well as what they're selling. And it's a sign they believe that the society still understands what a monk is. A good example of a failure to this was a MasterCard ad some time ago when they had, "It is more blessed to give than receive," anon. Well, of course, it's not anon. It's a quotation from Jesus that occurs surprisingly in the book of Acts. Maybe they didn't want to say Jesus because that would appear Jesus was endorsing MasterCard, so they took it out, or maybe they just had forgotten. In fact, there are a range of things like that you find in our culture where people forget the origin of important sayings. So every opportunity to remind the society about the reality of the Christian faith in some form, on the whole, I think is a positive, as long as it doesn't mock relentlessly. That is, English wet vicars who, if you portray clergymen as wimps, that I think is a loss to us. Whereas cunning monks, that's quite nice. So and I don't think we should be too precious about that if we can avoid it.
The TV series Mad Men portrays the 1960s American ad men as hard-drinking and womanising. Religion seems to play no part in their lives. But Dr. Rick Moore, who teaches mass media at Boise State University, knows a different history.
A large number of early advertising executives, especially in the United States, came from very strong religious backgrounds and maybe, in fact, had professional roles as members of the clergy, for example. So if the question is, are there strong religious dimensions in early advertising, the answer is definitely yes. And that is indicated to a large extent in regards to many of the early professionals in the field. I think to a lesser extent in regards to the use of religious imagery in advertising. And I think part of that is, even though people learn some of the aspects of how to communicate a message and especially how to communicate a persuasive message and carry that over into the world of advertising, I do perceive that some of those people thought it might be inappropriate to go too far in regards to using religious imagery to make their points. I mean, we might use a number of other things to be persuasive in regards to selling soap, but whether we would use, for example, an image of Jesus to do so might be perceived by a lot of people as crossing a line. In my own sense of the early history of advertising is that many of those professional practitioners did think of those things as crossing lines.
Although Yankee shaving soap used Adam, didn't they?
Yes. The idea that, Adam must have been born without a beard and you shouldn't have one either, that people with hairier faces are kind of barbaric, and civilized people like Adam separate themselves from beasts by the fact that they have a clean-shaven face. So there's a certain degree of that. But again, I think the interesting thing is there are degrees here, and using an image like Moses, perhaps, or Adam, perhaps, might be perceived in certain contexts to be acceptable. But I think for a lot of people in Western culture and in American culture, especially, getting too much use of something like an image of Jesus might be perceived as crossing a line and might be deemed to be potentially offensive to too large a group. Now, certainly if you're creative, you're probably going to offend a small number of people, but there's always that calculus that someone needs to do to determine if it's too many for the purposes of making it a sale.
I'm Adam Ferrier from Naked Communications. I'm the founding partner there, but also a consumer psychologist.
So Naked Communications is an ad agency?
Naked Communications is halfway between an advertising agency, a media agency, a brand consulting agency, and a PR agency. But we do advertising and media strategy. Religions have known how to market themselves better than any other brands ever have. Therefore, the brands that religions have created are very, very strong. So if you see somebody else appropriating certain aspects of that brand to build their own brand, then it's not going to really damage the religious brand, if you like, because those brands are so big and built over such a long period of time. So if you think about the ethics of that, that's a different issue. Then what people are doing is they're appropriating some of the goodwill, I guess, if you like, of a religious brand and trying to apply it to their own brand.
Have you ever used religious images in an ad campaign?
I can't recall using religious images in our communications. In the world of marketing, to be frank, I see everything as fair game. I'm there to serve the best interests of my clients and to do that in as a respectful manner as possible, I guess. And if we really offended anybody, then we wouldn't be doing the best thing by our clients. So I guess my job is to balance what's in the client's best interest with the needs and mores of a society, make sure I don't offend the mores of society, yet at the same time try to sell my clients' brands.
Pace a voi, Giuseppe Maria. Siamo I quattro re magi.
Before Christmas a few years ago, Red Bull withdrew an ad on Italian TV after a Catholic priest declared it blasphemous. It depicts the nativity scene with four wise men, the extra one giving the energy drink as a gift. When questioned by Mary, the wise man replies, "It gives you wings. Where do you think the angels get theirs?" Complaints on religious grounds were also made in Australia, but the Advertising Standards Bureau dismissed them, saying that the cartoon advertisements communicated a humorous, satirical story or message, and not a true life scenario. Dr. Rick Moore has studied religious imagery used in advertisements in some popular magazines like Time and Newsweek.
In the study that I did, Spirituality That Sells, I found that one of the most common kinds of religious imagery was people engaging in certain kinds of religious practice. And specifically, we saw a large number of people who were actually engaged in something that very much appeared to be some form of meditation. People sitting either in kind of the Zazen or lotus position. Very few images of people, for example, in the traditional position of what most of us think of as Christian prayer. The images of Western religion were a little more dark. I used a distinction that they tended to be focused on the historical. They were, for example, images of Adam and Eve, or images of Moses and the commandments, or images, even for example, of a woman sitting in a church, which was clearly an older church building, very dark, very dim, whereas the images of Eastern religion tended to be very bright. They tended to be much more contemporary. They tended to be, in my perception of things, much more hip. The people were clearly very well attired. They were had their hair and their makeup and other things in very contemporary fashion. And interestingly enough, they tended to be selling pretty hip contemporary products, things like electronic appliances. They were in ads for very respectable upscale American hotels, for example. And they were communicating the idea that if you want to be with it, if you want to be up to date, these are the things you should buy. And certainly there is, again, that latent communication that these are the ways you should behave. And we saw in many of the ads, the way people behaved, if they were acting religiously at all in a contemporary setting, was to engage in, for example, meditation. And in this case, the question is, even though the people who create the ads don't think of it as having any kind of negativity to it. What's the big deal? Down deep inside, we always have to ask ourselves, what are the deeper levels of communication that occur? And it's very possible, if a message is sent over and over and over again, that Western religion has this dated historical cultural significance and has no application to our contemporary everyday lives, I would say at the latent level, there are some significant questions as to whether that might have a long-term cultural effect in communicating that there are other alternatives to Western religion that are perhaps more hip, more trendy, more worthy of your consideration. We're simply using these because we know they're common currency.
Adam Ferrier's clinical psychology thesis was about identifying the underlying constructs of cool people.
What we have in the juxtaposition between Buddhism and Christianity is representing the old school and kind of everything associated with older style brands. So it's very closed, it's big, you know, stone four walls, you're in or you're out. Whereas Buddhism is a much more kind of contemporary brand, if you like. It's very open. It can be practiced on the individual's own terms rather than accordance with a strict set of guidelines. So in some ways, Buddhism represents the way new brands market themselves and Christianity represents the way old brands market themselves. Now, I just want to state, that's not to say one's obviously better than the other. There are lots of old brands doing very well. There are lots of new brands doing very well. And I'm sure that's the same for Christianity and Buddhism.
Is it possible to make Christianity cool, do you think?
Of course it's possible to make Christianity cool. To make something cool, all you need to do is get cool people using it. So if cool people start to endorse Christianity, then Christianity will become cool. Now, at the moment, that seems like a long way off, and Christianity has a very kind of, I guess, for want of a better word, daggy kind of perception. And that's because lots of the things they try to do or the people they associate themselves with are somewhat daggy. They need to understand what makes people cool, where cool people hang out and get their brand associated with those people, and it will become cool by association.
So who are the cool people? Where do they hang out?
Well, who's cool to you may not be cool to me, but the cool people of society are generally the ones who are following their passion, making a career in the creative arts somehow, and you know, younger, hipper, out there kind of people. I want to reverse all of that because I don't think it's a very fair question of who the cool people are. What Christianity needs to do is work out who they think the cool people are, market to them, and market to the people who are influential in society, get those people using their brand or endorsing Christianity, and the rest of us will follow, unfortunately, through herd-like behaviour.
Clear the mind. Mind clear. I still can't figure out how I got charged twice for that pair of socks. That doesn't make sense. Unless they charge me per sock.
Celebrities like Ellen DeGeneres promote a cool lifestyle. In this ad, she's sitting cross-legged in a spacious meditation hall somewhere in Asia.
It's more than just a card. It's the service of American Express.
The American Express advertisement had Ellen trying to meditate and having us think it's kind of funny to see Ellen with her typical kind of humorous tone of voice wondering whether something that happened yesterday is more important than what she's doing right now, which is supposed to be getting in touch with a deeper form of consciousness.
Buddhism in the West is a minority religion. It has an exotic otherness to it, doesn't it?
The indications seem to be that it's a growing religion, it's growing in popularity, but at the same time, it's definitely a minority faith. And historically, of course, we want to be respectful of the fact that we understand that it is the faith of the other. For most of Western history, Buddhism was thought of as the religion of the East, of what people used to call the Orient, and it was therefore thought of as what today is considered by many to be a derogatory term. It was an Oriental religion. And so there's that interesting balance that while in many ways Buddhism is today becoming very trendy and very hip and a tool for marketing things, back further in our history, we have a certain degree of suspicion or skepticism towards that religion and towards that culture. And there's always the question of whether this is simply a way in which we're seeing that the mainstream religion, the religion of the masses, is being avoided because it's too touchy or too sensitive or people don't want to step on the toes of Christians. And yet people that create advertisements maybe are willing to step on the toes of the other, the person who practices a religion that's different than the mainstream. The reason I'm not completely convinced of that line of thinking is the notion that the Eastern religious meditative practice was presented over and over again in a very positive light. You also have to realize that it's a growing religion. It's a religion that's growing in respect in the U.S., and advertisers tend to want to be one step ahead of the next guy. And so there's also just the possibility that this is something new, which raises the question, in 10 years, might Buddhism be just as much a source of laughs for advertisers as is Christianity or Judaism in ads such as the Altoid ad, which in this case was simply to show two people in the Garden of Eden who have experienced something new and different and have astonished looks on their face, and it was an ad for Altoids, the curiously refreshing mints.
On Radio National, you're listening to Encounter. Let's turn now to the way religious groups sell themselves in the mainstream media.
Hey, Jesus. Thanks for everything. Like, thanks for sunshine. But what about sunburn? How come the more you have, the more you want? We've got more friends, but less friendship.
This TV ad for the Jesus All About Life campaign aired nationally in 2009.
A healthy body still isn't good enough. And how come the best things always have to end?
My name is Greg Clark. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Bible Society Australia. Just before 2009, some people in the Bible Society and some other Christians who are interested in Christianity's place in society started to wonder whether it would be possible to get an interesting conversation going about Jesus in general. And so the campaign Jesus All About Life was hatched. It began with some research and some perceptions about Christianity that said that people were very negative about church, but not so negative about Jesus. So we started with research, and that was important because often, you know, I think religious organisations think they've got a hunch about what should be said or a hunch about what people think, and often that hunch is way off. They've missed the zeitgeist entirely. So the Jesus All About Life campaign aimed to use television ads, radio ads, to a lesser degree print, to make some noise about Jesus. We had some interesting elements involved in the campaign that not many people have. For example, we had a racing car. So Andrew Fisher's Jesus Racing Ministry was connected to the Jesus All About Life campaign, and he's in the V8 supercars. People know his name. He's got a camera in the car, so he's often seen on the television screens.
So who was your target audience?
The research showed that I think it's 68% of Australians have a vaguely positive perception or very positive perception of Jesus himself and the Christian faith. And so we aimed for people who already feel a little bit of positivity towards Christianity. They're not there for an argument, but might not really have done anything about it for a long time. And the age group that this affected was mainly young adults.
I think the Jesus All About Life campaign, I think what worked was the tone. I think the tone was contemporary, and it had quite, for want of a better word, cool imagery. And I think that's what people picked up on. It was just a very different tone of voice for Christianity to be communicating itself in. I think what didn't work is the call to action wasn't particularly strong. I don't know what I was meant to do once I saw that campaign. And what it was actually saying was a little bit kind of nebulous as well. It wasn't a particularly crystal clear message. Like, what does All About Life mean? And obscure is good. Obscure gets people to think, but you need to have it. It needs to be underlaid with a crystal clear message as well. And I don't think there was one there. But I think it was a good attempt.
Over 1,500 churches from 15 denominations participated in the campaign by putting up banners on their churches, offering information to those people who walked in the door or went to the website. The Right Reverend Rob Forsyth, Bishop of the Anglican Diocese of South Sydney.
Many of the churches in the Diocese of Sydney had Jesus All About Life notice boards and stickers and things up there. I think the Jesus All About Life campaign is one of those campaigns who's designed to raise the level of public awareness a little bit up. It's like trying to put a bit of water in the ocean. The ocean will rise, but by a very small amount. I'm not sure that Jesus All About Life campaigns are going to effectively raise the community's acceptance or awareness of the issues about the Christian faith very much at all, I'm sorry to say. For us, it's hard to judge because we in the Diocese of Sydney had a campaign of our own called Connect09 at the same time, and it was going the other way. It was about churches connect with your community, knock on doors, run street fairs, find ways of helping people. It was very much a boots on the ground, personal face campaign to make churches look outward to their community. Jesus All About Life occurred while that was on, and so we kind of piggybacked on it. But I think our approach was the exact opposite. Ours was not, let's have a large media buy. It was, let's go local. Let's go word of mouth and local. And I think that did bear fruit. It bore fruit in people connecting with their community. It bore fruit in people knowing and learning about the Lord Jesus Christ. It let some people be himself coming to living faith.
We had to look at the successfulness of the follow-up to the Jesus All About Life campaign fairly critically. And it'd be fair to say that the most successful parts of it were the noise-making. The least successful parts were what happened afterwards. So some churches experienced growth for a period of time, but we didn't have a particularly strong follow-up campaign, which is why the Bible Society is now very interested in another campaign in 2012, which thinks carefully about, well, what do people want to do if after they've had a conversation about Jesus? How can we help them to explore the Bible further, to know God more deeply? How can we help the churches to do that? Because after all, that's what they're telling us they want to do. So now we're building a national Bible engagement campaign, which doesn't have a groovy name yet like Jesus All About Life. It could be the Bible All About Life, who knows? And we've got an idea, and you're going to get the scoop on this because it hasn't been released yet. But we've got an idea that we should try and do this in 25 words or less. After all, people have very short attention spans. They're used to tweeting, Facebook status updates, short advertisements. Even our national leaders only get 25 words or less on the evening news. I suspect we'll use social media rather than mainstream television, partly because mainstream TV is very expensive. And social media is also very targeted and very successful.
Dr. Greg Clark, CEO of the Bible Society. Bishop Rob Forsyth had the unique experience of connecting to thousands of city commuters along Parramatta Road in Sydney with just a few powerful words.
The notice board at St. Barnabas Broadway had been going since the 1920s. As far as we know, Robert Hammond, a remarkable minister. But he started he called it the weekly pulpit, wayside pulpit. And he had these corny messages every week up there. And when I became rector, I inherited, you had to put a notice board up. And in 1985, to my great surprise and then delight, the pub opposite started replying. And they kept replying until the mid-90s, when the pub was unfortunately bought out and was no longer a pub, and the man, dear Arthur Elliott, moved somewhere else. But that was a real highlight, the two interacting. And that's the best kind of advertising, because it was not just the church saying a vague truth. It was fun. There was interaction. It became a cause of remarkable interest. They're very hard to think up, by the way, because you've got to have say something, about 7 words maximum. It's got to make sense to someone who doesn't know the Christian faith. It can't be in-house. It's got to make you think. And it's got to make you think in a way that does good. So it's very hard to get right. I remember worrying about the notice board. It'd be a real pain in the neck. I've got to think up something. What can it be? I remember the lights turning green. And before I'd crossed the intersection, I'd thought of it. You know, that sort of moment. And it was back in the 80s. It was, God's pursuit of you is not trivial.
Now, the issue for religious brands is marketers of consumer goods have lifted their game. So now we see research that shows the McDonald's arches having as much meaning to people as religious symbols. So therefore, the issue is religions are going to have to lift their game a lot more as well if they want their brands and their logos and their icons to stand out more than other consumer goods. And what that means is they're going to have to be able to get better at telling their story in a more clear, shorter, punchier, sexier way. We've just come through an age called the information age. And the information age was terrible at solving any of the world's problems. So what we have learnt is that lots and lots of information doesn't really get us anywhere. Like it or not, what advertising has told us is that if you find a hook, make it compelling, and then sell that hook to people, then they'll figure out the rest for themselves. So for religion to work, it needs to get its message very, very tight, get that hook very, very powerful, and then let the consumer work it out for themselves, rather than befuddle them with doctrine.
Adam Ferrier, who's the founding partner of Naked Communications. This is another religious advertising campaign you might have seen in the mornings on commercial TV stations.
To save one life is as though you have saved all of humanity.
Here, an Aussie lifesaver rescues a small blonde-haired boy from the surf.
Show kindness to your parents, just as they cherished you in childhood.
A verse number from the Quran is written on the screen after each of these quotes.
Give in charity of the good things you earn. Even a smile is charity. Explore the real values of Islam. Find the missing piece at mypeace.com.au.
My name is Dean Muhammad. I founded MyPeace, which is an organisation that was created to address the many misconceptions of Islam. And I felt that the image of Islam was being distorted and not reported accurately, and the stereotypes were just getting more and more. So I decided to take Islam back and show people what it really is. And we did that by going mainstream advertising. And we started off in June when we put up some billboards. The billboards that MyPeace set up were in Sydney. There were three initially. One was Jesus, the Prophet of Islam. There was another one that said Abraham, Noah, Moses and Jesus and Muhammad, all prophets of Islam. Got questions, get answers. And the third one was Muhammad, mercy to mankind.
One of them, as you mentioned, was Jesus, a prophet of Islam. Yeah. That was a very controversial billboard. Why do you think it was? And did you expect that controversy?
When I put up the Jesus, a prophet of Islam billboard, I didn't expect the amount of controversy that it got. Well, I thought it would be thought-provoking, not so much provocative. I do sort of understand why some people from the Christian faith, why they might have been upset, but it's not a new concept. You know, Muslims have believed in Jesus, you know, for 1400 plus years. So it's not a new concept. I think it was just a new concept to non-Muslims saying, well, hold on a second, these guys are trying to hijack Jesus from us, which is not the case. And to be fair, the majority of people weren't offended and the majority of people were supportive. It was only very few pockets of people that were offended.
And there were, was it three billboards that were vandalised? Or two.
Well, there was the Jesus Prophet Islam one, which was only up for a day and a bit, to be honest, before it was torn down. There was the Islam Got Questions, Get Answers billboard, which someone went and broke the light so at night it wouldn't shine. There were only two that was somewhat vandalised. The rest were fine.
And do you know who did that?
I do, actually. I think a day or so after the Jesus one was pulled down, the gentleman who ripped it called me and offered to pay for it and apologised and said it was a silly mistake. We've actually become somewhat of friends. If I do need something or if he needs something, we call each other and say, look, there was a particular version of the Bible that I wanted to get a copy of, and he was very, very accommodating, and he needed an imam to come to their church and have a dialogue, and I tried to help him with that. So it's actually through some act of unkindness brought two people from completely different faiths together and actually built a relationship between them.
If I Google My Peace, I also get Refuting My Peace as a website, and they have slogans similar to yours, but it says Jesus, Saviour for Islam, Holy Bible, the Final Testament. Muhammad was a false prophet.
Yeah.
So are you offended by this sort of advertising, or is it a healthy part of religious debate, do you think?
No, there's healthy and there's childish. I think they fall on the childish side. When you look at the Aussie Christians billboard that were put up, I think it was in good taste and it promoted dialogue. I think the billboard said, Dear Aussie Muslims, love that you want to talk about Jesus, let's chat more. And they did that in good faith and they did that in good taste, and we did and we chatted and we've built, you know, somewhat of a friendship. The Refuting My Peace side is just not in the spirit of things, I would say.
Well, I'm very excited to see other religious groups, such as the My Peace Muslim group, using mainstream media, because it makes for a great conversation. I would much rather have us talking about our sacred texts and our sacred traditions on television, on radio, in the newspapers, rather than the latest Hollywood celebrity marriage breakdown.
So you weren't offended by the Jesus, a prophet of Islam billboard?
No, I'm never offended by religious discussion. I'm offended when people aren't listening to each other and they just start fighting. But I love it when there is vigorous and informed discussion going on. And the billboards about Jesus being a prophet of Islam provided just that. It provided Christians a chance to talk about who they think Jesus is and to discuss that with the Muslim community. Where do we get our information from? How do we read our different sacred texts? What can we trust from history? What do we know about Jesus? How do we come to our conclusions? And there have been some wonderful debates, public debates, as a result of those billboards. I've always been very interested in public Christianity, and I used to work at a place called the Centre for Public Christianity, because Christianity shouldn't be hidden in a back corner somewhere or even hidden behind the sandstone walls of a church. It belongs in the public square. Jesus did what he did not in secret but in public. And ever since the early centuries of the church, Christianity has been lived out in public and tested in public and had its impact for good and for bad in public. So it belongs in the public square. So any religious discussion we can encourage in Australian public life, I think, brings a big benefit to our society.
Dr. Greg Clark, CEO of the Bible Society. What does Adam Ferrier from Naked Communications think about religious ads that might offend some members of the public?
I think with religious advertising, religion is such a... It's much more significant. It means so much more to people than a consumer good does. And so therefore, any message and the emotional response of any message is going to be magnified a thousandfold. And so if some people do get upset by a particular message, such as Jesus, a prophet of Islam, I don't think it's necessarily such a bad thing if the greater good is that people kind of consider the message and discuss it and work out for themselves where they stand in relation to that message. I don't think religion or anybody else can be hamstrung by the actions of a few people on the extremes. So I think sometimes upsetting a few people on the fringes is just part and parcel of doing your job.
An episode of ABC TV's The Gruen Transfer, broadcast earlier this year, certainly upset a few people. In fact, for the first time in four seasons of the program, some agencies declined to make an ad because the pitch was to ban all religion. Some others were happy to. This is one of them, made by Loud and Clear, that's gone viral and has even found a home on atheist Richard Dawkins' website.
For every human achievement, there were ideas that were never meant to last. Ideas that got left behind as mankind evolved. We worship the stars and believe the earth was flat.
Yes, well, I saw the Gruen Transfer when they got people to pitch on banning all religion. And they were very clever. And certainly there's lots of things about religion that can be criticised. So I'm not surprised that those sorts of ads are very popular and sometimes go viral. Our challenge at the Bible Society is to see if we can come up with something positive that would compete. Now, as all politicians know, it's easier to run a negative campaign than a positive campaign, so we've got some challenges ahead of us.
And let's make religion history.
If I was going to do a pro-religious ad, I would absolutely focus on the benefits that are true and provable. I would leave the claims of world peace, I would leave the claims of peace in the afterlife alone, and I'll start focusing on the very real benefits of having a religion, and that is having a sense of community, having a sense of ritual. And I actually can't believe that these messages are being lost in esoteric debate about the meaning of life and so on. At its fundamental core, a religion is a place to connect with people in the community, and to me, there's more of a need for that than ever.
Adam Ferrier from Naked Communications. Internet sites are often linked to mainstream advertising on billboards and TV, and more people today are having conversations about religion and finding communities online. Dr. Greg Clark is CEO of the Bible Society.
Last time I looked, yes, Justin Bieber had the most followers on Facebook or Twitter. Kim Kardashian leads the list. However, the most engaged with Facebook pages are the Bible page and the Jesus page. Now, the churches have to take that seriously and say that people want to have religious discussions, but they won't start having them in your pews necessarily. They might start them online from the safety of their homes. The Jesus All About Life campaign was very successful in terms of social media, and bear in mind it was a couple of years ago, which is a long time in social media terms. Our Facebook page, Jesus All About Life Facebook page, is still running strong and has about 30,000 members, which puts it into one of the upper categories of community-based pages. It surprised me how popular it is, but many people love to do their devotions online. So we're taking that seriously as a Bible Society and putting resources into using social media really well.
Dr. Paul Emerson studies religion on the internet at RMIT. As well as asking questions about how young people create religious identities and relationships online, he's also explored the images and language used to advertise three Christian youth festivals a couple of years ago: the Catholic World Day of Youth, the Uniting Churches National Youth Convention, and the Hillsong Youth Conference. So what did he find?
The most striking commonality between all of them was they're shying away from traditional images that we associate with Christianity and with the reworking of them into more popular or modern forms. So there might have been something similar to a cross, but it might have been painted blue, slanted a little, using brushstrokes to make it look a little bit more artistic and a little bit more like a logo than a traditional image. And what I found particularly striking in the language is that they tried to move away from identifying themselves as a particular denomination. They didn't talk about Hillsong as part of the Australian Christian Church or part of the ACC. They didn't identify World Day of Youth as being particularly Catholic, apart from their promotion of the Pope's visit, so people, you know, obviously put two and two together and realised it was a Catholic thing. And likewise with the National Christian Youth Convention, they shied away of promoting it as a Uniting Church event. These were religious events, these were places for spiritual exploration, these were places for people to get together to talk about life and talk about how we can change the world for the better, but they shied away from talking about traditional doctrines or policies that we may see in other settings within those denominations.
Why do you think that that was the case?
I think it reflects, firstly, the ecumenical character of Australian Christianity at the moment, where people definitely under the age of 40 would not hold allegiance to a particular denomination as much as generations beforehand. So for young people who may be particularly devout, they might go with one group of friends to a Sunday morning service in a local Baptist church, but a local Uniting Church the following night would have a youth group or a Bible study that they would like to explore, and they would see absolutely no problem in attending those two or feeling that they were welcome in one denomination and not the other. I also think that the nature of advertising and public relations for churches has changed over the past 20 years or so, where the idea of religion, the idea of spiritual exploration, the idea of the church as a place to find a sense of spiritual wholeness has more advertising weight and value than talking about particular doctrines or structures within denominations.
The Bible Society is Australia's oldest continuous organisation, founded in 1817 by Governor Macquarie. Last year, it changed from a state-based to a national organisation, and Dr. Greg Clark became the CEO.
What we did as a result of nationalising is thought we now need to have one strong brand. And I wanted us to take seriously the fact that the Bible has a bit of a reputation problem in Australian culture in general, and not go to a Christian branding agency who might understand the issues for Christians, but go to a mainstream branding agency who would understand the broader issues. So we engage Banjo Advertising, who are a mainstream group. When I first visited the agency, I wanted to start off with them getting a sense of what we do. So I actually opened a Bible, looked up one of my favourite passages from the Gospels, where Jesus says, "Come to me if you're weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. My yoke is easy and my burden is light." And I said to the branding agency, our problem is that not many people think of the Bible as something that is light. Being a Christian is something that is light, that makes your life lighter, that makes your heart lighter. And can you help us with that? We talked for a long time and they did some brilliant work for us and came up then with the idea of the Bible Society was not interested in Bibles. We weren't really interested in our product. We didn't care how many Bibles people had on their shelves. We're interested in the product of our product. We're interested in what happens when you open the pages of a Bible, read the words there, and have your life changed, and have society changed as a result. This was a very clarifying exercise for the whole organisation because it gave us a vibe. And I think that's one of the most important things about branding, is to think of a vibe that represents what you're trying to do. Our vibe was that we're lightening hearts. And it positioned us differently, I think, to where Christianity is often positioned, is that it's a position of judging you for sin, emphasising how wrong things are. They're all important parts of the gospel, don't hear me wrongly. But often it's not emphasised that when you hear the message of forgiveness in Jesus Christ, of the love of God, it should be a heart-lightening experience.
And so the advertising agency, how did they translate that message? And what symbols are used in the logo?
In the past, the Bible Society has communicated a lot of content in its logos, had pictures of Bibles, for example. Or the image that we had until recently was of a sower sowing seeds. Now, that's fine if you know the Bible. There's a parable that Jesus tells about a sower sowing seeds in a field, and this is a little bit like sowing the word of God in people's lives. But it didn't say anything anymore to anyone. And if you didn't know the Bible, it didn't say anything to you, full stop. When we examined what we're trying to do and realised that we are interested in changing people's hearts, that clarified the logo. So the Bible Society logo now is a very simple B, when if you look at it at a 45-degree angle, is actually a heart. The sort of thing that we hoped would have the impact over time of the Nike swish, where it says something about who you are, but you don't need to analyse it with insider knowledge to get it.
The branding of churches is moving away from the idea of church as a place of worship, and that branding is shifted towards its mission arms. So there is more branding towards the Salvation Army's Red Shield appeal, towards Uniting Care and Anglicare rather than the Uniting Church and the Anglican Church specifically. What I'm finding is that when people are promoting religious events and religious festivals, they tend to shy away from using particular denominational logos because they want everybody to come to them. However, when the Uniting Church or the Anglican Church or the Salvation Army wants to promote its work in the community, that's when they'll attach their logo to it. We recognise that as denominations that have been around since the Europeans arrived on this continent, we've had a lot of money. This is the good stuff that we're doing with that money.
Advertising used to sell products isn't so different from advertising to sell religion. Dr. Rick Moore from Boise State University in Idaho.
For the most part, what advertisers really want to do is they want to brand people when they're very young. In the same way that most people don't want to learn a new computer program by the time they get to be 40 years old, for the most part, advertisers assume that at a certain point in our lives, most of us have chosen our brands that we want to be connected with for the rest of our lives. Advertisers look most often for young people as their target audiences because those are the ones who have not made that crucial decision yet, and especially that vaunted 18 to 35, something in that ballpark age group.
An area where advertising is quite different is at university missions. I no longer am at the University of Sydney, but I was there as chaplain and worked with the Evangelical Union, and we used to run big campaigns. We have a series of lectures during a week, and we'd advertise. And here advertising is a different. It's a small world of the university, and advertising is everywhere. We once caused a massive stink by our advertising. We got real go. We were very pleased. We had a series called it was provocative. It was the blank of the Christless blank. So it'd be the foolishness of the Christless life, or the cult of the Christless family, or the idolatry of the Christless religion. Some sort of, they were very in your face. Now, did it work? It caused a lot of interest. I got told off by a somewhat censorious member of the students' union. Someone claimed to have been accosted by a poster, and we really stirred the pot. That was in the early 90s. The trouble with universities today is, I think, because people don't want to offend anybody, I suspect our in-your-face, edgy advertising today would probably not be allowed. Universities are probably the one area where religious advertising can really make a splash. And young people can be idealistic in a way that older, more jaundiced minds cannot, which is a danger but also a lovely thing as well if directed towards good ends.
The Right Reverend Rob Forsyth. So what advertising strategies can we expect in the future? Adam Ferrier has recently done some research with Deakin University and Save the Children Fund to discover the most effective way for a charity to raise money.
The answer is to get people actively involved.
An interesting way to get people involved in a certain entity, whether it be a religion or a brand, is not to do something for that person, but to get that person to do something for you. So if we can get people to do something to help build our religion or to build our congregation or our community, whatever that might be, then those people would become more positively predisposed towards staying within that religion as well. And I think that's a principle that religions have known for years, like, you know, your hand round the plate in church services and you get people to donate money to themselves. And then it gets people to buy into the organisation. Now, that's the opposite towards how lots of brand marketers work, where they try to give things to the consumer. Religion's actually taking a little bit, and by taking a little bit, is kind of tying a deeper bond between the person and the entity. So getting people to act as opposed to trying to persuade them rationally or emotionally is a much more effective way to change people's behaviour.
There's a book you might be interested in looking up called The Gospel Blimp. It was a parody from America about a church that wanted to spread the message of Jesus Christ. So they bought a large blimp, you know, hot air, and went out throwing little messages out of it into people's homes, rather than going and meeting them as real people. It was a parable that went to say that the best way to share the messages of the Lord Jesus Christ is through personal relationships. And I think that's true. All that the best advertising can do is be a backdrop, that's all. But the real game is going to be word of mouth, I think.
We were quite keen to do some activities around Christmas this year, leading up to our 2012 Bible campaign. And we had ideas about sort of flash mob style things or activities inside shopping centres. But we approached some of the owners of the shopping centres who weren't so keen on allowing such things. There's this real issue around religion in public places at the moment, which I think has got a bit out of control. Because I loved the flash mob events that I saw from last Christmas, where people were singing Christmas carols and maybe it was Handel's Messiah in shopping centres. And I think that's a great example of positive religious fun being had in a public place using media really well. And no wonder these things go viral, because they're uplifting, they're absolutely heartwarming, heart-lightening things. And I'd love to see more of that happening in Australian life.
That brings us to the end of this encounter. My thanks to Greg Clark, Bishop Rob Forsyth, Paul Emerson, Adam Ferrier, Rick Moore and Dia Mohammed. You can find details, including a transcript, on our website at abc.net.au/rn/encounter. Technical production today was by Lila Schunner and Judy Rapley. I'm Kerry Stewart. And I'll leave you with the Hallelujah Chorus, sung by a flash mob of over 100 people at the Welland Seaway Mall in Niagara Falls. It was organised by Alphabet Photography last Christmas.
Lying on the beach, driving in the car, snoozing in the shade, wondering how you're going to fill all those hours of summer holidays? Well, why not take a bunch of Radio National podcasts with you? We've made the choice easy with BeachPod. It's our rich archive of podcasts sorted into a whole range of topics. Load up your MP3 player at BeachPod and have a summer full of ideas, lives and journeys. Look for BeachPod on the Radio National homepage.